Good evening and welcome to this week's edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, a Derby special. Two issues in that area with a petition over changes to bus services. We hear from the petitioner and the infrastructure minister. And government plans to redevelop the area with £1.8 million set aside in the recent budget. But do the community want it or even believe it'll happen? Dropping bus timetables in favour of a pre-booked dial-a-ride service will isolate some residents in the north of the island. That's the view of a campaigner who's opposing Isle of Man Transport's decision to use the Connect Villages service in place of scheduled buses on its Derby routes. Louise Whiteleg has set up a petition asking the Department of Infrastructure to reconsider the move. She explained why she's against this change to Sian Cowper.
I actually had a friend ring me. She lives in Derby. I've made some quite good friends up in Derby in the last couple of years. And my friend rang me. She'd just got the bus back from Ramsey. And the bus driver was asking her if she's ready for this transformational change that is going to be to the Derby bus service. And that's when she found out that they're cancelling the regular services and everything's going to be a dial-a-ride at 24 hours notice.
When this was first announced, it was sold as so much more convenient because you can book a specific time, but from what you've been hearing, that's not really the case.
No, absolutely not. There is an argument in for having both, for having the regular Irish service plus the opportunity. But then that's what taxis are for. So there's this conflict going on there anyway. People's concerns are if you need to book 24 hours. I mean, could you book everything 24 hours in advance for what you want to do? What about when you ring the doctors in the morning and they say you can only get an emergency appointment if you ring on the same day? You can't go. The same with a dentist. What about your child who's at Ramsey Grammar School and they're sick during the day and you need to bring them home? How are they supposed to get home? What about the people who aren't planning or want to do anything spontaneous? And what about tourists, do I dare say it, who want to go up to the TT Museum and people who want to go to Derby to visit? How are they supposed to get backwards and forwards? By having to pre-book in advance of 24 hours, it's socially isolating. We're chopping people's wings. What about the kids? You know what it's like. I mean, it's closer to you than it is to me, but you know what it's like when you're a kid and you met up with your mates and you said, oh, come on, let's go to. It takes away that spontaneity. So you're going to be trapping the children in the Derby area and not allowing them to get out and go into Ramsey to go bowling, to go and meet up with the pals, because it all needs to be booked 24 hours in advance. It really needs a lot of thinking about. My real concern and the thing that's got me on my high horse is that I really sense that this is completely against the spirit, if not the letter, of the gender of the Equality Act, because it's going to be disproportionately affecting the women and the children. I would say the vast majority of the people who use that during the day. And I would like to see the bus companies' surveys that they've done and looking at who uses the buses, why they use the buses, what the demographics are of the people who use the buses. Because my just anecdotal evidence is mostly it's women and children that are going to be penalised by this change, and that's against the Equality Act.
Do you think this is as much about cost saving as trying to provide a better service?
It would appear so. The roots of this appear to be in the SAVE programme. It was quoted that of the £6 million of savings that have been identified in the SAVE programme, over 50% of those can come from public transport. So I'd say that's where this scheme has been identified. And also don't forget they have spent £6 million on 33 single-decker buses and 19 minibuses. So they've got to find a use for those buses as well. But is it a case of short-term savings against long-term losses? And those losses are things like social mobility. I mean, you can't put a price on social mobility. Public transport is public transport. It's there to provide a service for everybody, and you shouldn't be able to put a pound price on it.
There have already been objections from taxi drivers about this. Why is it so important that the public speaks out as well?
Everybody's got a voice and we need to use that voice. And if there's a change that's mooted or a change that's planned, which is going to affect us, our friends, our family and other people who we don't know, who we know are going to be affected by that, every single one of us has got a duty to speak up. If we don't use our voice, we won't be listened to.
Have you reached out to Isle of Man Transport, to the Department of Infrastructure? Have you had any feedback from them?
It's all been very swift, actually. This has all cropped up around a telephone call that was made by a friend to me on Monday. I did actually ring the telephone number for the Dial-A-Ride to find out whether or not the information I'd received was correct. And I was told, yes, definitely, we're going to the Dial-A-Ride system on the 6th of April. We're still going to be keeping the hourly buses for the first week until people get used to it. But then after that, it's going fully, the Joby service, to the Dial-A-Ride system. So that's when I got active and started asking questions and asking if people, and it started out as an awareness raising campaign. As has been mentioned this morning, there is actually a document out there that's got the application for the licence for the RTLC for the bus vanning to be able to do this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to find that application and I'll make sure that that's publicised so people can get fair opportunity to read all the details, think about it themselves, and also if they feel that they want to be able to put an objection into that committee.
One of the reasons the Department of Infrastructure has given for doing this is they don't want half-empty buses going around constantly. What do you think the solution to this problem is?
Well, nobody wants half-empty buses. But my solution would be the complete opposite, which would be to promote the use of buses. We are a biosphere over here. We are looking at what we can do to reduce our carbon footprint on the Isle of Man. So surely we want to be encouraging more and more people to use public transport and to leave the cars at home and to reduce the car journeys that they make. So I always come at things from maybe a slightly different angle, but I'd certainly be wanting more people to leave the cars at home and to use the public transport. Look at making public transport free. Look at what the value is that would add to our Isle of Man, our economy, and to the people who live here.
Now, you have circulated on Facebook a petition. It's got over 100 signatures already. How can someone find that if they want to add their name to this campaign?
I think you'll fall over it if you go on Facebook. It's been shared an awful lot of times. It's on my personal Facebook page. It's on the Isle of Man Politics page. And it's been shared by an awful lot of people in the north of the island. But also, if that fails, if you Google Go Petitions and check out Joby Transport Petition, you'll find it that way.
Louise Whiteleg, who set up that petition, and you can find the petition actually at gopetition.com if you want to take a look at that. Well, Infrastructure Minister Ray Harmer tuned into Mandate last week with Alex Watton to issue this response.
Well, joining me on the line now is the Infrastructure Minister himself, Ray Harmer. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, there's a number of issues that Mrs. Whiteleg has outlined there, but what's your first reaction to those concerns?
Yeah, the first thing that has to be said is that Big Bus is not being withdrawn, and that's completely wrong. So that's complete misinformation. That's absolutely not the case. If the Big Bus will continue to be used in Jerby and across there. So what you will see is you'll see a complement of both the demand responsive transport, which is a programme for government, actually supplementing the continued service. What we've said is really important, and it's completely opposite to what you've just put on the radio there. It's actually about social inclusion. We've successfully put it in the north of and with the local MHKs and talking to them, we've successfully put it in Andrews, Bride and Mackold. We're getting a 97.7% success rate. 20% more people are using the service, and what we're finding is that people who've never been able to get out, you know, actually say, well, I've been trapped for years because of the difficulty of getting from their house to wherever they need. So this is very much a part of the continuing investment we're putting into Jerby and the north with the successful bid that we've got for Jerby. This is a real positive investment for the island, and we'll be going around doing roadshows at the beginning of April to show how it works. If anybody is not unsure, please call us, use a website. There'll also be dual running. So you'll have the existing service and, where there's the demand responsive side by side, so that there can be, as people can see how it's working. But what we've found so far is, and this is evidence across many jurisdictions, is that, you know, for those who are elderly, who are, you know, with families and, you know, mothers and children and things like that, absolutely, this is a fantastic service. The other thing that needs to be made is that with a demand responsive transport, which has been very successful, is, yes, you know, to book your journey, it's the day before. Having said that, if you need to book on the day, that will be accommodated as far as possible. So I think there's a lot of misinformation. Nobody's actually hasn't had that discussion, hasn't looked at the what's going forward. And actually, this is a really, really positive. And I think it's really, really sad when something that's really positive for the North is just completely switched around the other way. It's actually including more people, more social inclusion. That's why we're bringing these services in, getting more people on the buses, which improves our environmental. And has to be said, the main bus service, the big bus, is still going to be there during the day.
Okay, well, we've got you here now. Let's make this as clear as possible so we've got the right message going out. We've still got the big bus remaining in the town. There is going to be a service which will, of course, be more accommodating for certain people. But do you concede that other people, some of the examples perhaps that Mrs. Whiteleg was talking about with people going to school in Ramsey Grammar, women and children, may be adversely affected by a dropping of some services?
Well, the school children will get their school service in the morning and they'll get their school service in the evening. There are five services which will be replaced during the day, but for example, there'll still be service at 8:55, 8:02, 8:15, 9:02, 14:52, 4:12, 4:27, 5:27, 5:22, 7:04, 9:02, and 10:54. Late service on the Friday. Service is still on the Saturday. This is really taking, if you like, where you've got buses that go around a very long route that take a long time that aren't popular at all, actually providing a flexible service that those people that need it, that have been trapped, that need to get to the doctor, that need to that need to get out, in the past have literally, because of the cost, have been trapped in their home. So this is a really positive thing. It's a trial. It's something that we've successfully brought in. I've had really positive comments of how it's changed people's lives, and this is something really, really good and should be embraced and sort of celebrated, rather than mistruths said about it that actually we're doing exactly the opposite. We're actually trying to bring people together. We celebrate and treasure our biosphere status, and this is a very important part of it, and it's something, as I say, we need to celebrate.
Okay, well, obviously it's something that people are very passionate and emotive about, this subject, yourself included. For the best place to get that clarity and get that information, where should people head, because this is clearly something people want to know about?
Yes, yeah, so please contact public transport, please contact the Bus Fanning website. Please call for further information. It's 662525, or email publictransport@gov.im. Well before any of the changes, we'll be going and doing roadshows in Jerby. There's one on Monday, the 1st of April, 2 to 4, Thursday, 4th of April, 11 to 4, Saturday, 6th of April, 11 to 1 p.m. That will be a great time to actually find more information about what's going on.
Infrastructure Minister Ray Harmer. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Now, we heard about the buses, but the Jerby community also wants to see more facilities on offer in the parish, but some still doubt government's commitment to develop the area. That's the view of Angela Quaggan, who runs the Jerby and Northern Community Initiatives, a charity focused on improving opportunities for the village. £1.8 million has been set aside in the latest government budget to develop and improve Jerby, with concepts such as new homes, a BMX track and community gardens all mooted. Initial plans by the Department of Infrastructure also include a shipping container cluster to provide workspaces, craft studios and community meeting rooms. The department chose not to conduct a consultation with residents when drawing up the plans, so last summer a series of public meetings were held. Residents listed what they wanted to see offered in the village and fed their views back to the DOI. Mrs. Quaggan says many wanted to see affordable housing built to sustain the community. There's also a feeling in Jerby that existing assets aren't utilised to their full potential. Units in the industrial park lay vacant, whilst the community centre, built in 2012 at a cost of £1.6 million, isn't used fully by the health services. Instead, it plays home to Mrs. Quaggan's charity, which uses it to run community-led events. She says the department's exact plans for the area have yet to be unveiled, and with previous promises made to the people of Jerby failing to materialise, many remain distrustful of government commitments. I spoke to Mrs. Quaggan.
We're still waiting to hear ourselves as to how the actual budget will translate. But last summer, we held a series of public meetings to have a bit of a chat about how we'd like to see Jerby developed. The public fed back into that, and we came up with all sorts of ideas that we were able to pass back to government to say, you know, please, can you take these into consideration whilst you're planning?
Now, you've shown me some of the ideas that the community brainstormed here. What are some of the things that are needed in Jerby?
Well, we were hoping to look at things in a really innovative way, that Jerby is a real opportunity. We have a real opportunity to do something quite interesting, to look at what the community has already, not necessarily just what we're lacking, and see if there were ways of developing that. So we haven't actually come up with anything that's completely off the scale bizarre or completely unachievable, but simple things like, you know, more affordable housing and also windbreaks. We're in Jerby and it would be nice to be able to do, you know, a bit of a walk down to school or a walk down to the community centre without being taken off your feet, to look at things that, you know, the way that the land is being used at the moment. So, you know, quite often people use the area for walking their dogs. So it'd be nice that whilst you're developing that, you know, take things like the established wildlife into consideration, take the ways that the land is being used at the moment into consideration. But again, there was nothing really completely unachievable there. It was just, let's do it sensitively and let's see if we can do something that really puts Jerby at the forefront of some innovative thinking.
You've told me that lots of buildings in Jerby, including the place we're in right at the moment and the industrial estate, there's lots of assets that are underutilised.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, I'm aware that there are industrial units on the estate, that there is very much interest in people becoming involved in them and using them, but perhaps due to the size of them, that it's actually not an opportunity that they can make the most of. There is hope, and I believe there is talk of seeing that turned around. So again, it's all about opportunity and seeing these opportunities being made the most of. Certainly within the Health and Community Centre, Jerby and Northern Community Initiatives, we've been in here for about a year now. So we have taken on a building that wasn't being used at all. We now have a variety of groups for young people, for preschool groups, for crafting, creative writing, arts. We're developing a computer room.
And all as a third sector group.
All as a third sector group. And I think the important thing is recognising that actually we've been so fortunate in people standing up and stepping forward and saying, do you know what, we want to see change happening and we want to be part of that change and we want to help make that change happen. And even though Jerby and Northern Community Initiatives have kind of been driving it, without people stepping up and stepping forward, it wouldn't be happening and it just wouldn't be sustainable.
Jerby has had several plans drafted up for it in the past. I'd just like to ask, is there confidence in the village that whatever government comes forward with will actually be acted upon?
In all honesty, I would suggest that there is hope still, but like you say, that when we've encountered this position before, that plans have been seen before. I've only lived in Jerby for about 6 years now, so I haven't seen them come and go and not come to fruition. So I'm perhaps not as jaded as I could be. But I've listened to stories of people from Jerby who've said, you know, we've been here before, we've seen the plans before, there's no point, it's going to happen. But I think the tide is turning. And I think in terms of actually being listened to when we fed back into the planning process, that was really encouraging. I think there's still hope, but certainly tempered with a level of maybe a little bit of cynicism.
And is there a community spirit in Jerby? It doesn't fall often into the media's spotlight. You'd be forgiven if you're from another part of Ireland for not knowing what's going on here. So is there that sense of community?
I think it certainly still exists. And I think, you know, certainly even with the neighbours that I have myself, that It's lovely to know that there's people around you that you can count on. There are good people. And I think in terms of activities here, that perhaps you don't hear of what's happening within a community, because actually it's not rocket science stuff that is necessarily media worthy all the time. It's people getting on and supporting each other and looking out for each other and behaving like a community and being there for each other. I personally think we have a good community. We definitely have ways that we could improve and that we can build on that community spirit. But yeah, I think we're a good bunch.
And how badly do people want these changes? I mean, are they desperate for them, or is it sort of tempered with a sort of patience?
There's always been the thing with Jerby that there's a chicken and egg scenario, that people want to see more in the way of facilities out there, of things to do. But without the housing and perhaps the number of residents to support it, it won't happen. We've kind of maintained that something needs to happen at some stage, something needs to give. So more houses might bring more facilities might bring more houses. So we'll wait and see what happens. But certainly people do want to see some degree of change, and they would like to see something come to Jerby that they would actually like here. That, you know, quite often things end up in Jerby perhaps where they didn't necessarily want to see them happening. So it would be lovely to see something positive that the community is fed into, that they've helped develop, and that will enhance their living space.
You mentioned how sometimes there's been this approach to Jerby planning, maybe social housing, whereby, oh, it's Jerby, it doesn't really matter, it's all the way out there, who cares? Do you think that still exists in the higher circles? Do you feel represented fairly?
I think we're certainly getting there, but if you were to speak with many residents, I think that feeling is still strong, and perhaps not without good reason. But I think actually, if we, in any walk of life or in living in any area, if you roll over and say, oh, it doesn't matter, then actually it's an open invitation for people to not bother. Whereas actually, if you are standing up and saying, do you know what, I'm proud of where I live, or I want to see change and I'm prepared to feed into that, then you can make the difference. So yeah, I think there is still that feeling there, and perhaps in many pockets it is really very strong, but I think it's possible that strength can be turned in a different direction.
And tell us more about what you're doing here at the centre with the Northern Initiatives. Just what is the sort of plan, the arc you're on for developing this space?
Well, we're hoping to be able to provide space for community to build and develop. We're not looking to fix anything or to be a solution, but we want to be able to act as a link, to be able to see different things develop. So we've been really very fortunate when we've been approached by people. So for example, this afternoon we have a card making group that meet once a month, and today they've popped in and said, well, actually they'd like to be able to meet again to do other different bits and bobs. Can we accommodate that space and accommodate that group? Which we're in the fortunate position of being able to do. Off the back of that, we've seen different relationships develop. So perhaps, you know, when somebody has been poorly at home and they haven't been able to come to a group, they've developed links with people and they're now looking out for each other. And, you know, somebody now goes and does a bit of shopping for somebody. So it's, again, it's not rocket science stuff, but it's just building connections with people and bringing us back together.
Is there any initial reluctance or pushback when you try to get these sort of initiatives started?
The government have been really very supportive of us in what we're trying to achieve here. But I think, as with anything involving a charity or something new and untried, it's quite tricky in places. So even, you know, from the point of view of, you know, your health and safety and your safeguarding and your insurances and the rules and regulations that exist within government, it can be quite tricky. But the support is there, and I think the willingness to see this become a success is definitely there. What we're doing and how we're approaching it is really, really working, and we're seeing community engagement, and we're seeing, you know, the positives that can come off using the building in this way, and seeing a building that wasn't being used. But I think it's been a good learning curve and a steep learning curve for all.
Why isn't it being used?
Well, my understanding of it was that prior to our becoming involved and managing to get the licence to operate in the space, is essentially the infrastructure wasn't there to be able to organise the groups and manage the groups. So that's my understanding.
In terms of the community's interaction with what you're trying to do here, was there any resistance from them at all, or did they welcome you with open arms? How did that go down?
I think, again, it was met with a certain level. And even now, I have spoken with people who've said, do you know what, I'm there's no point me coming because it's going to stop, or it's not going
to... Too good to be true.
Yeah, it's too good to be true, or it's going to be taken away. So there was a level there of people being quite sceptical and quite dubious about, you know, what we're doing and why we're doing it. But now I think, you know, we are certainly getting there. The groups are building and the connections are building, and that has been the really important thing.
Angela Quaggan there from the Gerbia Northern Community Initiative charity. You can find out more about what they do online via their Facebook page. Right, just taking a pause from our agenda, we'll look at the Tynwald agenda for tomorrow. There is a sitting, of course, in the morning. Aaron Ibanez joins us just to run down what's on the plate for tomorrow.
There's a noticeable green push from several arms of government, with reports from Manx Utilities, the Department of Infrastructure, and the Environment Minister expected to give a statement on a new climate mitigation strategy. Members will also be asked to approve the key terms of the Sea Services Agreement negotiated between the Department of Infrastructure and the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company Limited. Health Minister David Ashford will ask for £4 million extra for his department's budget. And Dr. Alex Allenson will ask for £23.5 million to push on with the sewage treatment works in Peel, Laxey and Bulldrine. Finally, MLC Miss August Hansen will move for the creation of a youth parliament for the Isle of Man.
Thank you very much, Aaron. And of course, you can view all the information of that online via the Tynwald website. That's all from tonight's programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda next week. And you can listen again to this episode online as a podcast. But for now, gurumayu and have a good evening.